Thanks very much. Hi, everybody. It's me, Bill. Wendy has the day off. Filling in for Wendy, my friend Dane Neal. Hello, Dane. How are you?
Hello.
Thank you very much for doing this.
Yeah. I'm not. I am your friend, but not exclusively. We'll be the friends with everyone today. That's great.
Yes.
Unless you
want to
be
more than others. Some will be chums. Some will be buddies.
Will be pals.
Some will be amigos.
Amigos.
A little bit of
compadres.
Everything. Yes, I can see that happening. Thank you for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Well, I'm happy to do it, and I'll do everything I can to emulate the spirit and enthusiasm of a Wendy Snyder tonight.
Oh, them's some big boots to fill.
Yes, she let me. She's got a whole closet of kind of boots that you put on.
Right.
If you're going to do that.
I meant it figuratively.
Yeah.
Yes. All right.
Take them off, Dane. Take them off.
Right.
They are a little tight.
There's a small note on her boots that say, "Please, Dane, don't wear these during the show." So I should inform you.
I thought that was like a disguised code of like, "Yes, do."
No. Just the opposite. Just the opposite. Steve and I were having a conversation earlier, and I want to fold you into it. Every once in a while, a television show comes along that kind of wows you, astounds you to some extent. So Steve and I noticed that we both have the same sort of fandom for the same show. And that is a show called Afterlife. Have you seen this yet?
Ooh.
Ricky Gervais?
I have not.
It's on Netflix.
I have not seen it. Is it along the lines of, you know, somebody like the Beverly Hills Madam or something? Not Madam, a medium, excuse me.
No. Here's what's great about it. And Steve, tell me
what do you watch, Dane?
I watch it all.
Right. We just got to know more about you in the last 4 seconds than I've known about you in 5 years.
I mean, it's a very obscure show where they actually like they channel like former ladies of the night and things like that.
Oh, they do. Yeah. Well, that sounds like fun. Right. That sounds like fun. All right. So the thing that won me over immediately about this show, and I've always been a Ricky Gervais fan. I know there are people who can take him big time or can leave him big time, but I've always thought he's really, really talented.
Oh, yeah.
Is the way the show straddles being so funny and so sad within seconds of each other. The premise of the show is he plays a guy, Tony, whose wife has just recently passed away.
Okay.
So he finds himself in his late 40s, early 50s.
But absolutely devoted to each other.
Oh, so devoted.
Okay.
So devoted. So he, on almost every episode, he's telling somebody about the void that has now been left.
Okay.
So you automatically, if anyone out there has a spouse or somebody close to them who you feel this way, where it's not just your husband or your wife or your boyfriend or girlfriend, but it's the best person you've ever met.
Yeah, like what would you do?
You lose them.
Right.
And I know that that's been addressed to some extent in other movies and TV shows and books. I get that. But it's the
remember Ghost?
Ghost is a great example. And there was pottery in Ghost, too.
Right.
You had all those emotions and pottery. There was a pottery wheel.
But the sort of comedy is that he's like lost his filter. So
yes.
He doesn't care.
Right.
He's an atheist. He's got nothing to lose. So he's like, I'm just going to say what I want.
Yeah.
And he's good at that. We know his his resume.
There's, without a doubt, there's a lot of him in this character. He's not totally lost, you know.
He plays a features writer for a small town free newspaper.
Right.
Okay.
It's hilarious.
Right. Yeah.
It sounds great.
But Steve, would you agree with me? And this is hard to pull off because I was thinking in my head of other TV shows or movies or books where they have done that, where you're laughing and laughing and laughing and then something is said or done and it's just an abrupt halt and then you're wiping away, you know, tears in your eyes because you go, oh. How true would that be?
I mean, it's one of those things when Ricky Gervais is good and he's on or he's got the right project.
Yeah.
He's just perfect.
That's so true.
Because I'm with that. You know, sometimes there's a little too much Ricky for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think he's perfect for this role. And it's all him, right? I think he wrote it.
He wrote it, directed it, and stars in it.
Yeah, I think it's a great show.
Yeah.
It's only 6 episodes, too.
It's a tough line, though, right? You know, to go ahead and have both of those emotions in the same kind of frame there and be able to pull it off.
He tells people to go kill themselves.
Yeah.
Which is there a disclaimer or a waiver for him to sign before you
walk out? That wasn't a laugh line, you
right.
guys.
Right.
But I mean, that's how dark it is sometimes.
Some of the suggestions made on this show are not to be followed.
Right. Right. So I highly recommend the show. And as Steve just pointed out, it's only 6 episodes. And both Steve and I were in the situation. I just watched the last episode last night. And Steve, I think you said something similar.
It was over the weekend, yeah.
You didn't know that it was coming to an abrupt halt because most shows last longer than 6 episodes.
I was surprised when it ended. But
yeah.
So my only criticism was I thought it wrapped up a little too neatly, but that's because I wasn't expecting the ending.
They are going to make a second season. It says at the very end, remember how at the end of a James Bond movie it would say 007 will return in, and then it tells you the title that's at the end of the credits? So in the credits for this, for the last episode of the season, it says season two to be found in 2020. So,
which will be interesting because a lot of these series are very good at telling one story, and then when they try to keep it going,
right?
You know,
you're talking about I Dream of Jeannie, aren't you?
Exactly. Yeah,
I agree.
Major Healy.
I mean, they brought in her sister. That didn't work.
No, it did not. It wasn't as good. All right, we'll take a short break. We'll come back, and we've got all kinds of stuff planned for you. I'll explain more in just a little bit. Your threats and trials.
My comments. Bill F. Stain Neal. Steve, can you name who's singing this song?
I'll know it when you say it, I think. But it sounds familiar, like I'm going to say, I should have known that.
It has a very Duran Duran sound to it.
Yes, it does.
It came out at that time when Duran Duran was winding down, and Pet Shop Boys sounded like this. There were a lot of bands in the mid to late 80s that had this sound.
I listen to this music a lot. It drives my wife crazy.
I love this music.
I do, too.
Would you be shocked if I told you that this was Ricky Gervais?
Yes, I would be.
It is Ricky Gervais.
Okay, I was completely wrong. It is shocking.
Can you believe this? I mean, I love this song, and I knew that he was in a band in the 80s. Sonora Dancing is the name of it. But it's got a good sound to it.
What level of success did they achieve back then?
Oh, zero.
Okay.
Zero level of success.
One, in fact, maybe at least one fan, right?
This marks the first radio play for the song.
I don't know why, because I guess they were a product of too much sounded like this.
Oh, yeah. Because you could have said that this was, you know, a Pet Shop Boys B-side.
Right.
And
everyone would have bought that.
Yeah, Steve included.
Yes.
He would have been less shocked than he was by the
so
real
true.
Answer.
So true. Here's a fun story. Jennifer Herity, who lives in Texas, filed a suit against the baseball Houston Astros, on Monday, claiming that a T-shirt fired at a game last July irreparably injured her left index finger. She is seeking $1 million in damages.
Bless her heart.
So, as they would say in Texas, as everyone in Texas would say upon hearing this story, oh, bless her heart. So they bring out, and I know you've been to enough games to have seen this, what they call the T-shirt gun. It's like a cannon.
And right, cannon, gun.
And it's got a very violent sound. Right. We're not playing a game anymore, Dane. This is war. Yes. We brought the cannons and the guns, and we're going to shoot T-shirts at our friends.
They got like T-shirt squirter or something. Right. You know, something less.
It doesn't have the same impact.
No.
So they aim these at the crowd. They do this, you know, in between innings, obviously. They aim it at the crowd. Everybody wants one. People go nuts. It's just cotton, folks. It's not the biggest deal in the world. But people will kill each other over a free T-shirt at a venue. So they shoot it at her. It hits in her left index finger. She's claiming $1 million in damages. Herity was sitting in the third base stands about halfway up the first deck at a game against our Chicago White Sox. This is on July the 8th. Of last year, when the team's mascot, Orbit, launched a T-shirt from close range that smashed into her hand and fractured her finger.
Wow. At
Amazing. First, she was like, here's what she says. At first, I was like, oh, gosh, that really hurt. Hey, watch the language, Jennifer. Right. Kids might be listening to this.
It's a family show.
She told Houston ABC's affiliate KTRK in an interview, but it was a T-shirt. Surely it didn't do any damage. I'm sure it's just jammed. As the rest of the game went on, she told her husband, I think something's really wrong with it. She went to the emergency room after the game. She was told that her finger was severely fractured and would require surgery to reconstruct it. Can I take a quick time out? Is that possible that you could hurt yourself to that extent from a T-shirt that shot? She wasn't right next to the gun. She was up in the seats.
And I said, you said that people will maybe kill themselves or kill others, right, in the, yes, in the quest for the shirt. And I could see an injury happening where people are either trampling over each other or climbing over the seats in order to get at the
right.
shirt, right?
Right.
Or to push someone down in order to make the catch of the shirt. But the shirt itself, if this was a normal shirt and not some sort of metal shirt, I don't know that you could hurt you. She used the words irreparably damaged,
right,
and then they're going to reconstruct.
Yes.
So even yes. if something needed to be reconstructed, do you think you'd need to wait till you got home and have your, hey, this finger's blown up. Does it look funny right, to you, husband?
Right. I know. I've been to so many games over the years where when a foul ball, now I know this is different because it's a t-shirt, I get that, but just a mere foul ball into the crowd turns people into savages. Well, you could go and buy, I know it's not the same as catching a foul ball, but you could buy a league ball for a couple of bucks. It's not the biggest deal in the world.
Well, these are all souvenirs from the game, unexpected souvenirs. And so these are, you know, things that I think that, you know, people are excited to have. And you know, there's a lot of words on the back of the ticket, Bill. And they all, if they're not going to pay someone when someone gets like blasted in the head with a bat or whatever, because it's, these are the things that are just happening within the confines.
See, I think for a foul ball, you fight. That's a
fight. For a foul ball, fighting is good.
Because that's, you know, that's a significant souvenir that others can't get. It was just held by, you know, by Wilbur Wood.
Right.
You know,
one of your favorite baseball stars.
Stands and, yep. and so for those who fight. But the t-shirts, and the dangerous t-shirts are not the ones out of the gun. They're the parachutes.
Oh, I've seen those at Bulls games.
Because then you have time to maneuver and right. push each other out
right.
of the way. And
right.
The Hunger Games right. of the shirt.
There was a, this is many, many years ago.
It brings it back to food.
The only foul ball I ever caught at White Sox Park came off the bat of Julio Cruz of the Seattle Mariners. So he pops it up down the first base line, which is where I was sitting. A crowd gathers as everyone's going to catch it at the same time. There's 25 or 30 of us in this giant crowd trying to wait for the ball. It bounces from one hand to another, and then under the seat next to me. I quickly grab the ball and get out of the scrum of everybody trying to fight each other.
Smart.
They stayed there for 5 minutes, punching, fighting, biting, doing anything they could to find that ball. I had it and just moved out of the way, and I didn't do that thing you always see on TV, which is hold it up and smile. And so I just got out of there quickly.
You need to. Right, because they'll turn on you, too, because I think that there's, you know, the 5-second rule when you drop some food or whatever.
Right.
I think there's really a good, I don't know, there's this haze that goes over people. Maybe it's 30 seconds where it's kind of that, you know, if there's a fumble on a football field.
Right.
It doesn't matter what really happened. It's whoever comes out in the end with it.
Yeah, possession is not established yeah. instantly.
No.
You never know with the balls. I actually caught, I caught it off of a lady's head. Dexter Fowler's.
That did, just so you know, run, that but. Didn't sound good.
No.
You know that, right?
But here you go, because then you think, okay, someone who, you know, there's always that level of guilt when there's a little kid and the kid's supposed to get it.
I don't think if it goes off someone's head, it's a catch.
but she made faces like somehow she was entitled.
Like she was in pain?
Well, because she had suffered for the ball. So the ball came in. It was in the bleachers. This was 2016, and Fowler had hit the ball, and one of those one. It's the only time I've ever caught a ball or a foul ball, home run, or anything. And I was like, whoa, this is really getting close.
Sure,
normally it's a false alarm. And it was not that close. It was maybe 10 feet. I'm like, okay, well, whatever. Bounced off the lady's head up,
<That's>
up to me.
That's horrible.
And so then I just didn't make eye contact with her because, you know.
You weren't going to give it to her.
No, I wasn't.
Oh, dang.
I mean, there was this whole kind of, I thought about it, like, well, but then I'm like, well, geez, you know, and then she's
got cerebral hemorrage. So I should probably give her the ball.
Okay. Well, because you get a ball and you can see the scuff where the bat hit it. You can see, like, the league president signs it.
Right.
You could see her hair's embedded in the rawhide.
Did you see any hair or gray matter?
I thought that added to the provenance. You know, it goes into the story.
I went through a stretch of probably 7 or 8 years where I caught one every year.
Really?
I had season tickets at Wrigley.
Oh, that's outstanding.
And I would, and I would always, when I go, pick out a little kid nearby who
and give it to them.
Who I'd give it to.
Oh.
I made sure not to make eye contact with any little kids either.
You're a hero, Dane.
I don't know.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We've got some news. And then your chance to win Todd Rundgren tickets coming up very, very soon. Stick around. It's Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN. All right, it's time for somebody, actually two of you, to win tickets, a pair of tickets each to see Todd Rundgren on the Individualist World Tour in the intimate setting of the Anthoneum Theater. There are two shows, April 23rd and 24th.
Each night will be a completely different set list of Rundgren's hits and deep tracks spanning his 50-year career. You can buy tickets at LiveNation.com, or you can play a fun game called Famous People and Their Pets at 312-981-7200. Here's that number again, 312-981-7200. We will play two rounds of this day, and we will have two winners, and those people will each get a pair of tickets to see Todd Rundgren.
It's exciting. Anytime you take famous people, everybody loves them. A lot of people love pets.
Yep.
Bring them together.
Who loses in this equation?
It's all winners.
Everybody wins in this equation. All right, we will meet our contestants for round one. Let's start out with Mitch. Mitch is on the line. He's calling from Glenview. Mitch, how are you?
Great. How are you, Bill?
Mitch, are you half as excited as I am to play Famous People and Their Pets?
I am three quarters.
Wow. I'm not great with fractions, but that's a lot, Mitch. All right, excellent. Mitch, you'll be playing against Jim. Jim, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Very, very good. Where are you from, Jim?
I am from Bourbonnais.
Jim, it's a tough task. You're playing Mitch from Glenview. Las Vegas oddsmakers have him at a 2-1 favorite, but anything can happen when you play Famous People and Their Pets. I'll explain the rules, okay. Gentlemen. The rules are very, very simple. I'm going to give you a clue about a famous person. You must tell me who that famous person is, and also tell me what type of pet that person has. How can you determine what sort of pet that person has? Because the type of pet rhymes with the famous person's last name. Is that understandable? I hope it is. The pet can be an animal, a bird, a fish, an insect, anything that could conceivably be a pet. I'll give you a quick example of one. For instance, this is just a sample. Don't buzz in on this. The current quarterback of the Indianapolis Colts and his pet.
Andrew Luck.
Andrew Luck and his...
Duck.
That's how it's played. Very, very good.
I was going to say Buck. So
no, a Buck. I would have accepted Buck, Dane. I would have accepted it. All right, so here we go. There are eight rounds in Famous People and Their Pets. When you know the answer, buzz in by saying your name, either Mitch or Jim. The first one is worth 100 points. They will escalate up to 800 points, each one a little bit harder than the last. Round one, worth 100 points. Ready, Mitch and Jim?
Ready.
Yep.
Here goes. Buzz in just by saying your name. And again, remember, you have to give me the famous person and their pet. Here goes. Round one. The lead singer of the Crickets from 1957 through 1959.
Mitch.
And his... Mitch?
Buddy Holly.
And his... Jim, control of the board goes to you for 100 points. Lead singer of the Crickets from 1957 to 59 and his pet.
Holly.
Give me the whole thing. The lead singer of the Crickets is?
Buddy Holly.
And his?
Pet Holly.
Absolutely right.
Nice.
So that goes to Jim, right? Jim, you were the one who got that?
I got that.
Jim, you have 100 points. Number two is worth 200 points. Here goes. This little rascal went on to play Beretta and his pet.
Robert Blake.
Oh, who buzzed in?
Oh, Jim.
Jim, go ahead.
And his...
Oop, time's up. Mitch, it goes to you, the little rascal who went on to play Beretta and his pet. Mitch, for 200 points, who would that be?
Robert Blake and his...
Guys, time's up. Dane, you know this one?
I would say snake.
Yeah, Robert Blake had a snake. Absolutely right.
But he was dressed in a cocktail costume.
always dressed in a cocktail outfit. Jim, you lead. You have 100 points. Mitch had zero. Question three is worth 300 points. Here goes. She could turn the world on with her smile. And her pet.
Mary Tyler Moore.
Who Jim? Is this? Jim, go ahead. Mary Jim? Tyler Moore and her? Nope, Mitch, it goes to you for 300 points. She could turn the
Mary
world
Tyler
on.
Mary Tyler Moore and her boar.
Yes, absolutely right.
Wow.
Mitch, you get 300 for that. You lead 300 to 100. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll find out who the winner is. Somebody's going to get a pair of tickets to see Todd Rundgren. Mitch, you lead 300 to 100, but there's plenty of time left. All right, it's Bill Leffin, it's Dane Neal. Dana's sitting in for Wendy. She'll be back tomorrow. We're in the middle of a game called Famous People and Their Pets, a very tough game. So far, Mitch is our leader. He's got 300 points. Jim is in a close second with 100 points. Whoever wins this round will go on to see Todd Rundgren. They will get a pair of tickets to see Todd Rundgren. And we're going to do our best to get a second round in really quickly after this one. Guys, 300 to 100. Mitch and Jim, you're both there, right?
Yep.
Okay, good. Here is question four. It's worth 400 points. The man they call Mr. Television and his pet. No one on this one?
No.
Dane, do you know this one?
I don't.
Milton Berle.
Oh, okay.
And his squirrel. No one got that one right. Round five is worth 500 points, gentlemen. Don't forget, buzz in by saying your name. Mitch, you're still our leader.
Squirrels 300. Have rabies, Bill.
Yeah, so did Milton Berle. Oh, did you know that?
That's how we got it.
Mitch, 300. Jim, 100. Anyone can win. Question five is worth 500 points. Of all the actors in The Godfather, he had the most trouble at toll booths and his pet.
You're killing me, Bill.
No one on this one. This is a tough one. Dane, you know it?
I believe it would be James Caan, and what people don't know is he had a pet prawn.
No, he didn't have a prawn. There's no pet called a prawn. He had a swan.
Like a shrimp. Oh,
James Caan always had a swan
sense.
With him.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Question six is worth 600. Mitch, you're still our leader, 300 to 100. But I like that you're playing defense. That's excellent. Here goes. For 600 points, the former first lady who wrote the book Becoming and her pet.
Michelle Obama. Mitch.
Mitch?
Michelle Obama and her llama.
Yes.
Oh.
Well played, sir. Mitch, you have 900. Jim, you have 100. We go to question seven. It's worth 700 points. Ginger Rogers' dancing partner and his pet.
Mitch.
Mitch, go ahead.
Fred Astaire and his hair.
No, hair is not a pet. That's
a rabbit. It's a rabbit.
That is not a pet.
Oh,
you're right.
To the judges.
Yeah. And yes, the judges have reconsidered. We were looking for bear, but we will certainly accept hair. H-A-R-E, not H-A-I-R. Wow, homonyms, huh?
Wow, tough. Good one, yes.
Well played, sir. Now, there's no...
Thank,
I would do an extra...
to the judges.
Yeah, the judges were very... They were shocked.
Absolutely.
Jim, there's no way to catch up. Mitch now has 1,700 points to your 100 points, so we declare Mitch as the winner of the first round. Well played to both of you.
Wow,
stay on the line.
Good job, guys.
Mitch, congratulations on the Todd Rundgren tickets.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Do we have time for a second?
Congratulations, Mitch.
Oh, that's what I like to hear,
Jim.
We have time for a second round, so call quickly, 312-981-7200, if you want to play the second round of Famous People and Their Pets. I'm afraid now that these questions are too hard. Are they? I don't think they are, but they were struggling through most of them.
Well, I don't know. I'm still kind of... I'm still working through my disappointment for the James Caan and his prawn. You know, because
I
like
couldn't give you prawn.
Yeah,
okay. I could not give you prawn. All right, let's meet our contestants for the second round of Famous People and Their Pets. Again, somebody's going to walk away with a pair of tickets to see Todd Rundgren. He is playing in his Individualist World Tour at the Anthoneum Theater on April 23rd and 24th. You want to go to LiveNation.com for all the tickets. But let's find out who our contestants are for the second round. We'll start out with line five. It's Tom. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Tom, I'm doing great. Now, you heard the first round. Is this impossible, or is this fairly easy for you, do you think?
The first round, no problem. Second round was a little challenging, but, you know, I think I would have had it.
Okay. Again, if you want to be a contestant, 312-981-7200. Call quickly. We've already given away one pair of tickets. Mitch from Glenview was our first winner to see Todd Rundgren. The shows are April 23rd and 24th. It's going to be Tom against one of you at 312-981-7200. Who will it be? Call now. We'll find out who the winner is. Again, the show, I think I mentioned this, but if I didn't, is at the Anthoneum Theater on April 23rd and 24th. Each night will be a completely different set list from Todd Rundgren's hits and deep tracks. He's been doing this for more than 50 years. It should be an awesome show. You can get tickets if you don't win them here at LiveNation.com. Again, that's LiveNation.com. You, Tom, will be playing against Jesse. Jesse is on line one. Jesse, you heard the first round, right? You know all the rules?
Yes, sir.
All right, Tom, it's you and it's Jesse. Good luck to both of you. Question one is worth 100 points, and it goes something like this. She played the Sally that Harry met and her pet.
Tom.
Tom, go ahead.
Meg Ryan and her lion.
Yes, absolutely nice. Right, Tom. You lead by a score of 100 to nothing. Question two is worth 200 points. Jesse and Tom, buzz in by saying your name. The former lead singer of Journey and his pet.
Tom.
Jesse.
Tom, you were first.
Steve Perry and his...
I got to send it your way, Jesse, for 200 points. The lead singer of Journey and his pet.
Goldfish.
No, that almost rhymes with Perry, but not quite.
I don't know. I didn't have one.
I would have accepted two answers, canary or dromedary. Either were correct. Steve Perry had both a canary and a dromedary, although goldfish. They fought like crazy.
Oh, okay.
They always fought. All right, question three is worth 300 points, gentlemen. Buzz in again by saying your names, either Tom or Jesse. Tom, you lead 100 to nothing. Here goes. Question three. The late actor who played the father of Fraser Crane and his pet.
Oh. He's from Chicago.
I can give you a half a point for that. But I can't give you more than that. The late actor.
John, I can't remember.
No one on that one?
God bless
him. We were looking for John Mahoney, who, of course, Dane had
a Shetland pony.
He had a Shetland pony for many years. People know that about him.
That's how he got around.
Question four is worth 400 points, guys. A big lead for one of you if you get this one right for 400 points. The Ohio senator who was the oldest person ever in space and his pet.
John Glenn. Jesse.
Oh, wait. I need a name.
Oh, yeah. Jesse. Tom.
Jesse, go ahead. Jesse was first.
John Glenn. A hen.
I need a whole answer.
John Glenn with a hen.
Yes, John Glenn in his head. Jesse, you've taken the lead.
Very good. Very good.
400 to 100 and a half.
If you look closely, Bill, in those photos,
yes,
the hen was actually with on one of those Apollo missions.
Is that true?
A very small.
I didn't know that part, so, Dane. Yeah. That's fun. That's a fun fact. All right, Jesse, you have 400 points. Tom, you have 100 points. Question five is worth 500 points. Good luck, guys. Hogwarts all-time star pupil and his pet.
Tom,
go ahead.
Harry Potter and his otter.
Yes. Well done, Tom.
Nice.
You have piggyback Jesse. You have 600 points. Jesse, very close second with 400 points. There are three questions left, gentlemen, for 600 points. A bandmate to Mickey, Davey, and Mike and his pet.
Tom,
go ahead.
Mickey, Davey, Mike. Peter Tork. And his pork.
The judges strangely say no on this one.
Products made from the pet?
Jesse, control of the board goes to you. Bandmate to Mickey, Davey, and Mike and his pet. Nope, time is up on this one. Peter Tork, of course, famous for
the stork.
Yeah, a whole
flock
many
of
years.
Storks.
Yeah, a lot of storks.
Stork.
All right, question seven is worth 700 points. Here goes, guys. It's very close, 600 to 400. Tom is in the lead. Question seven, 700 points. Her most popular Saturday Night Live characters included Gilly and the Target Lady and her pet.
Oh, I know this.
Time is up, gentlemen. Time is up. We were looking for... No, wait, it's too late. Kristen Wiig... Yes.
And her pig.
She had a pig. We go to our last question, guys, for 800 points. Now, so far, Tom, you're our leader. You have 600. Jesse, you're a close second with 400. So if one of you gets this question right, you're our winner. If not, by default, it goes to you, Tom. A lot of pressure, Dane. A lot of pressure. Here goes for 800 points and the win. Here goes. He was left home alone twice and his pet.
Jesse.
Tom. Jesse, you were first. Go ahead, Jesse.
Oh, Macaulay.
No, time's up, Tom. Control of the board goes to you. He was left home alone twice and his pet.
Macaulay Culkin and his falcon?
Yes!
Oh, nice.
Tom! A buzzer beater, as we say in the business. An absolute buzzer beater. Right.
What a great show.
Wow,
what a great game, guys.
Well played. Tom, in the end, you are our winner. You get a pair of tickets to see Todd Rundgren on the Individualist World Tour in the intimate setting at the Anthony M. Theater. A great show. Two shows, April 23rd and 24th. Each night's going to be a completely different set list from Todd Rundgren's hits and deep tracks spanning a 50-year career. Everyone else can buy tickets at LiveNation.com. And because you came in a very close second, Jesse, and we did this with our first contestant as well, a $50 gift certificate for Builder Supply Outlet, true outlet prices every day. Check out The Edge in their state-of-the-art kitchen and bath showroom on Broadview. They also now have a store open in Orland Park. Guys, thanks for playing The Maiden Voyage of Famous People and Their Pets. Greatly appreciated.
Thank you. Thanks for the great show.
Stay on the line. We'll take a quick break, get you some news, and then more show. It's Bill and it's Dane in for Wendy on WGN. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. Steve, thanks so much. It's me, Bill Left. Wendy Snyder has the day off. Dane Neal is here doing two duties. He is both a co-host and a guest. You're like, you know how on Saturday Night Live, sometimes they'll have a co-host that's also, or a host, I mean, that's also the musical guest. You're essentially doing that.
Yeah, that's great.
You're doing both.
Two duties.
Yeah, two duties. Double duty. Easter is very, very quickly upon us.
It is. You know, and it's the kind of thing that you don't want to have. It just wake up one day and then, you know, you're trying to head into the Jewel-Osco or the Ben Franklin, right?
Yep.
Depending on where you're listening to us.
If you live by today's standards or if you lived in the 70s.
If you live right... Right.
Are there any Ben Franklin still? I don't think there are.
Right. They never sold it. They wouldn't sell this at Weebolt's. Would right. not find it there.
Right.
But you don't wake up, you know, Easter, you know, weekend and then say like, hey, I should get a basket. I should get some candy. You know, you got to kind of plan these things out. And the stores, they've done their part helping you plan and prepare by having, I think, these candies ready months ago. So
thank you, Brock's.
Thank you for Brock's.
But Brock's pulls out their Easter candy the day after Christmas. You can find Brock's Easter candy in December.
If you've ever been in the kind of board of directors room that they have at Brock's, you know, it's a huge, long chocolate table covered in foil. And that's where the big decisions are made. And just like any good golf tournament, you know, you start working on the next year.
Yep, immediately.
That next day.
Right.
And when it comes to holidays, and people love Easter for all the real, actual reasons people
The religious
observe.
Reasons.
Yes, of course. Those are very, we're not trying to, you know, diminish those as the real reasons for that particular season. But it is also one of those great candy holidays, you know, where the candy is specific. You know, Halloween has its own kind of team photo of great candy, whether it's the candy corn or those peanut butter chews and the black, you know, wax paper,
yes,
popcorn balls,
all very popular.
Easter has its own kind of stars of the candy world. You know, you don't just give someone here's a Snickers. You know, it's candy. Here's a Snickers. You have your own Easter stuff, and so
Snickers is smart because they don't change the flavor of the Snickers, but they put it in kind of a pastel colored wrapping.
That's what you do.
Makes it more Eastery.
You have eggs on there, maybe a picture of a rabbit or hare, as Mitch or Jim or Tom
H-A-R-E
had mentioned. And
can I throw something at you and you tell me if I'm wrong?
Sure.
This is my theory. There's not a man, woman, or child on the planet that truly enjoys marshmallow peeps. I think they exist, and I know they sell millions and millions of them, but if you think about it, do you like them? No. You don't like them.
Are they the holiday version of maybe the Necco wafer? Because, you know, where it had a following basically because of the huge Necco wafer lobby, right?
Wait. Really? The Necco wafer lobby?
the big machine that says, like, hey, it may taste terrible, but that means it's something wrong with you.
Right.
You know,
I always say if you run out of Necco wafers, just it's chalk. Just suck on some chalk. It's the same flavor.
So the peep is, I guess it has some of the essential ingredients of things that people traditionally sort of like marshmallow, right? And then there's a sugary sort of sprinkly kind of coating.
Yes.
Almost like a barbecue dry rub, right, on the outside
of it. Kind of.
And that can come in different colors. Now, the peeps, I think, are, you can get them all through the year as like the yellow, but they do have other colors.
Oh, they're in different colors, flavors, texture, shit, but they're all
the flavors, bad. I don't think, change,
they're
right?
They're all bad.
Yeah. And so I think the peep is along those lines where it's just something that maybe we've been just conditioned to kind of get and have and to enjoy to some extent. Now, here's the way that it works, and it's not unlike the Halloween, you know, candy where there is sort of a totem pole of like the org chart, right?
You know,
where like the Snickers and the Reese's are at the
top of the hill.
And when you get down to that popcorn ball, maybe
no
January, right? Then, you know that you're about done with it. And it's the same thing with the Easter candies. You have some really great ones that are at the top. You have some that people come down on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have some that just, you know, those really kind of, it's half wax, half chocolate eggs that are in there that are really kind of terrible. But with that compared to nothing,
right?
Boom, you're going to eat those a little bit later on in the month. So, but then there's some that only come around, you know, like your Cadbury egg.
Right.
Or your giant rabbit-shaped piece of chocolate.
Always delicious.
Yeah.
Actually, those aren't bad. I'm all right with those. You're talking about the ones that are wrapped in like a festive tin foil.
Sure, of course. Well, and those are, they may look the same as far as the shape of that specific animal, but they're totally different. You know, some are solid.
Right.
Some are actually made of chocolate. Some
have like a Nestle's like crispy, crispy chocolate. Those are the best ones.
Bad. Yeah. And then there's a way that people eat and enjoy them. Now you can just go to whatever part because mostly it's the ears, right?
Mm-hmm.
People start with the ears.
Right. But by law, if you're going to have a chocolate rabbit, always eat the ears first
people
because they can't hear you coming for the rest of it.
And that's merciful, right? I think it's the humane way to eat them.
By far the most humane.
It's like you don't hear me saying, like, I'm about to eat the rest of you.
Right.
You know, but then also, too, people think it's just by random chance that you start eating. But if you look closely, and I think we've just had so much experience, we just take it for granted.
Yeah.
On the back, there are instructions, and typically yes. It does say, bite the ears.
Follow the instructions, please. We beg you. Now, my brother and I, when I was younger, my brother and I were of the belief, and I know kids today are smarter than we were in the 60s and the 70s, but we were under the belief that whatever the Easter Bunny brought you, candy-wise, you should eat that day.
Oh.
I have no idea why we thought that, but we thought, this isn't going to hold
sudden
overnight.
Onset diabetes.
Yes. Let's have a contest, and we would eat it, need it, need it, and then we would walk from here to Kankakee and back, because we had a lot of sugar in our system.
Oh,
I don't know why we thought that was the thing we were supposed to do, but we did that every year.
As a kid, and then now as a parent, there is sort of this, I don't know what it is, you know, where you just understand that there's kind of this statute of limitations on restrictions, mm-hmm. and that the kids are kind of allowed to just eat themselves into some kind of coma, you know, that first day, you know, and then after that, you can say like, hey, stop eating. But you know what? It's proprietary. So the kids have the basket, then they, you know, take it in their room somewhere.
Right.
And then you just see lots of wrappers. And you know, they're eating it at all hours. Well, we all did.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard to keep a handle on it. That's why I think everything in moderation.
Yeah.
You know, give them like a, you know, just so much, which means you fill it up with meaningless toys, which would be like plastic things that are, you know, or a basketball.
We used to get a Tonka truck or something in our Easter basket.
And a lot of that plastic grass, which is...
Right.
Which is killing dolphins and sea turtles right now.
Oh, sure it is. Do you ever see the thing? They always have this at Walgreens and places like Walgreens, your CVS's or your Riberty Drugs, if you want to go back in time. Ben Franklin.
You got a time machine.
So they have a giant basket that's kind of, you can see through the covering. It's got a colored wrap over it. All you see is it's a giant, huge Easter basket, and it's filled with things. But if you look at what those things are... It's junk, 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 and jelly beans.
Yeah, it's mostly packaging. You know, it's kind of like whether it's the sandwich at 7-Eleven where all the meat's pushed up towards the front right. or whatever, or the fireworks display, right? The same
right.
thing, you know, where there's a rocket, it doesn't really do anything. Yeah, so you have a little bit of that. I think what we do typically is we'll kind of create the basket ourselves. You don't go for just the one that's for sale at Walgreens. Not that there's anything wrong with that. That's an easy way to
and
go.
And then you and your wife convince the Easter Bunny that that's the basket. To give to the kids, you mean?
Yeah. Right? Well, it's an email chain and
you back and forth with Easter Bunny.
It's a process. It's like some forms to fill out online.
Why don't we know? Like with Santa Claus, we know that he is at the North Pole 364 days out of the year, making sure that the elves are making toys for the kids. But with the Easter Bunny, all that's kind of gray. We don't know exactly where he is at any given time or who he's controlling and convincing.
Yep.
To harvest all the candy.
Well, I mean, if you ever watch the Nat Geo channel, Bill, it's all about being an apex predator. So the like Santa Claus, although he is jolly,
yeah, right, very jolly,
he's still like right at the top. He doesn't have any natural enemies.
No.
Where a rabbit, even if he is a magical rabbit,
that's true.
Delivering things, you know, let's say the foxes or the squirrels or the weasels of the
someone's
of the world,
out to end them.
Yes,
yeah.
It's always that whole kind of cloak and dagger thing.
Yep,
looking
I get
for
it.
His location.
I see that. All right, Dane Neal is sitting in for Wendy. We're going to talk more about Easter. If you'd like to jump in, we'd love to hear from you by text or by phone. We're at 312-981-7200. We'll get to that in just a little bit. Hey, Neil is here, filling in for Wendy. He's my co-host today, and we always bring you in to talk about food. This week, we're talking about the food that surrounds Easter, the upcoming holiday of Easter.
You know, it's one of those things, and people celebrate with food, whether they observe, you know, great holidays or personal holidays or things that happen in your life. You know, food is the way that people get together and celebrate, and Easter is no exception. There's traditional foods that go along with Easter, and I think like the ham situation is
that come to be? Do we have any idea why ham became the go-to meal for Easter? Like turkey, I kind of get for Thanksgiving, I kind of get. I don't like it, but I get it. But why is ham and Easter synonymous?
I know what you're thinking, because you're thinking of the big turkey lobby.
Yes.
You know, head lobby for turkey, and they're still very strong, and you can't go up against them, that's for sure. Well, I think ham is in there because ham is good. Ham is the kind of thing that you eat all the time. You know, it's not like you just feel obligated to make it during, you know, a certain time of the year.
Yeah.
And so ham is one of those things that I think people get together because, number one, I think there's a few reasons. It's big. You can get one big one. Everyone can kind of have that communal meal.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's also very tasty, and it's not hard to make, and it usually comes out pretty good.
I guess.
You know?
All right.
It's pretty simple.
It's funny because my family, I don't think we've ever done ham on Easter, but almost everyone I talk to, it's like the default setting. It's like, yeah, well, of course it's Easter. We're having ham. What else would we have?
Well, you have ham. We'll have like a ham at Christmas time. You'll have a ham like in addition to the turkey during Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
You know, you'll have a ham a couple times during the year, too. It's not one of those things you have all the time, but because it is so big, you know, there's always leftovers.
Feeds hundreds.
Yeah, you could send people home with some, and then you can feed everybody at the table. And I think universally, people pretty much like ham.
Most people like it.
Yeah, you get a honey glazed ham, spiral cut.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
It's a pretty good deal.
All right.
On the treats, and we've talked a little bit about some of the candy side of things, and I don't know if that happens at people's, you know, Easter table when they're sitting down with the family, that they'll have a bowl of Cadbury eggs, you know, for you to grab.
But what's more fun than throwing a jelly bean and having grandma try to catch it in her mouth during dinner? That's just a good time.
Well, I think the cautionary tale is we saw how someone can have irreparable damage to
their t-shirt gun earlier. T-shirt.
Imagine what a well-placed, you know, and directed jelly bean could do to a denture.
Have fun, but make it safe fun.
Dude. Yeah.
That's true.
And so one of the ones that gets a little bit of extra play on Easter is the hot cross buns.
Oh, I've heard of this.
Have you ever made these yourself?
Nope.
Well, the fine
I've heard of them.
The fine folks at Pillsbury have done it. And so
it's an old English rhyme, isn't it? Hot cross buns, hot cross buns, one a penny, two a penny, hot cross buns.
It's also, I think that was one of the first, you know, kind of educational pieces set to music.
Yeah.
On the financial side, teaching people how to start your own business. In fact, that was probably one of the early infomercials.
The first slogan.
Yeah. It was like
you advertising slogan.
Have an alpaca farm.
Yeah.
Or maybe. You know, have a hot cross bun business.
Agreed.
Yeah, so it's one of those that I think people make now and then, and, you know, it's not really something that I think you just put an extra kind of
little swirl on it.
X on the top, boom. You got yourself a hot cross bun. I think the fine folks at Pillsbury can help with that as well. You could make your own. And then you've got your kind of sides that go along with it, whether it's like the, you know, potatoes or traditional things.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
something for everybody.
I like to mix it up.
You know, that's the thing is, because I don't associate with one food on Easter, I think throughout my life, we've always just kind of had whatever we were having for dinner. Even if there's people over, we would just make extra. You know, I know there are some foods that accommodate a bigger crowd on Easter, but I think with my mom, when we were growing up, if people were coming over, yeah, we'll just make more. It was always different every Easter.
Well, and then you've got some that you're saying, well, geez, these aren't specific Easter-related foods. You know, you've got your deviled eggs, you've got your au gratin potatoes. These seem like the kind of foods that you will just find at a family get-together.
Right.
You know, the kind of thing that you can make in a big casserole pan, or you can make a bunch of. Like,
right.
So just make extra of them.
Yep.
People aren't, you know, you're not typically making deviled eggs just in an everyday situation. I'm going to whip up some of those, you know, for lunch today.
Yeah.
And so
I don't think the devil should be mentioned in a food that's a religious holiday day. I'll be honest.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah. Let's leave the devil out of this one. It's a religious holiday. That's what we say at my house.
So there'd be like angelic eggs.
We don't have Underwood deviled ham. We don't have any deviled foods. Just out of respect.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah, thank you.
You've got some New York style cheesecake is listed here as one of the, but we're not from New York, so
we can't have that.
We just have like an Eli's.
Right. That's much better. You wanted to mention, since we were talking about candy, the top and the bottom of the Easter candies, and I just have to say this. I'm a traditionalist with my candy on Easter in that jelly beans should be, with the exception of the chocolate rabbits that you talked about, you want to give the kids some jelly beans. Don't mess around. Get Jelly Belly jelly beans. They're by far the best.
They all look the same, but it isn't like, you know, some things you think of as a food and it is what it is and that's what it is, like a banana.
Yeah.
Right? There isn't really some, you know, like a name brand banana.
Chiquita.
Well, I think they've done a good job marketing, but if you get a banana, it doesn't have the sticker. You're not going to be questioning what brand.
Right.
Banana is this.
But with jelly beans, it runs the gamut from, boy, are these delicious, they taste like what they're supposed to taste like, those would be your Jelly Bellies, to, I don't know, I can't tell what this is. It has a mesquite flavor that I'm not used to in a jelly bean.
Or it's got a space-age copolymer flavor, which isn't really something that you want.
We mentioned Brock's earlier. Those aren't good jelly beans. Good Jelly Belly jelly beans. I know Brock's been doing it for 1,000 years, but they all taste the same.
People think if quantity, you're just going to... And I think that people have sort of this impression that the jelly beans are sort of a visual accoutrement of the basket.
You know, it's just colorful.
It's just there to kind of dress up what it looks like. But eventually the kids, if they're any kind of kids, they're going to be eating them. And
right,
you want the Jelly Bellies.
Starburst makes them now. They're not so good. Just get the Jelly Belly ones. They taste right.
As we've talked about some of the favorites, and people like them for different reasons, there's also the worst, the top five or bottom five. Worst
the ones that nobody likes?
Well, people must like them because they exist.
They've been selling them.
But these are the things you should stay away from. Choose some different things. Mm-hmm. You do have generic jelly beans is actually number six, but I think honorable mention since we've talked about it. The solid chocolate bunnies that aren't made necessarily of chocolate. Yeah. Chicks and Rabbits marshmallow candy.
Those are the Peeps, right?
Yeah, I guess. Ugh. Yeah, they do make rabbits. Because then Peeps is actually then the brand. This is where the brand name is really the one to stay away from.
Right.
The Peeps is number three.
But all those marshmallowy candies for Easter, they're just not good. I don't know who likes those.
Again, it's just tradition. Yeah. You feel obligated to include them. Then you've got bunny corn, which is Easter candy corn. I actually kind of like candy corn, the traditional Halloween style that's got the
three levels.
The normal colors.
The three flavors.
Yeah, and you can bite the different levels.
You're supposed to.
Do what you want. Yeah. So the bunny corn ones, they're just pastel colors.
Right.
And, you know, I can't tell if it's some sort of subliminal thing where they just taste different because my brain is saying they must be different.
Right.
I think they do.
You want the orange, yellow,
Vivian
and white.
Had some unicorn flavored ones.
Unicorn flavored?
Well, it was a unicorn on the package, and they said they were, I don't know, they didn't say there was bits of real unicorn in there because we know how tough they are to find.
Check your ingredient list.
It's like, it's tougher than like Wagyu beef, you know, unicorn. Yeah, but avoid those. And then the number one worst is Cadbury cream egg.
Wait, that's the least liked candy for Easter? I'm surprised.
Well, and I asked Esther this morning, and she said that was her favorite. So I don't know if maybe...
I'm shocked to hear that because I thought that would have been on the top five list, not the bottom five list.
Yep. And then on the top, here it is. So the top one is...
No, start at five. Do like Casey Kasem.
That's what I'm going to do.
Oh, okay.
going to do that, of course. The Robin's Egg from Whoppers. So
those are good.
Yeah, these actually look like, you know, if you've
sky blue color.
If you've made some bad decision and raided a bird's nest as a kid.
and ate the eggs?
We've all done
that.
Just play with them till they break, and then you feel bad. Yes. Just get out there and enjoy life, kids. The Robin's Egg from Whoppers. Inside,
I love those.
Delicious Whoppers.
Malted milk flavor.
Yep. And then the Lindt chocolate carrots are number four.
Mm-hmm.
But they make a pretty good product. Then three, and this is where you knew you'd had to see some of the all-stars in the candy world, the Reese's peanut butter eggs.
Anything Reese's makes is gold.
Yeah.
It's just so delicious.
They're the hit makers on the candy side. Then you've got the hollow chocolate bunnies, which are number two for the best, which I guess is probably in a... You know, everything in moderation kind of way to enjoy them.
Right.
The hollow.
You're still getting chocolate, but you're also getting just enough.
A little air.
Yeah. It's delicious.
Who can live without air?
More air, Mom.
Ask yourself.
You've had enough air today.
Or get some more air.
Right.
You look like you need some air.
Right.
These are the phrases we live by. Literally.
And the number one top selling, or the top loved candy for Easter is
the Cadbury mini egg.
So the Cadbury mini egg, loved by everyone, the cream egg, despised.
And I think that's it, where you're a company like Cadbury, you're making things that people love, you think you can do no wrong.
Right.
I think that you've lost your perspective, and then you put out the cream egg that nobody likes.
Dane, this was very informative and entertaining. Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you.
We'll take a little break. We'll get you some news, and then more of us, Bill and Dane, and for Wendy on WGN. London is calling, Dane. Tell them I'm not in. Tell them I'm working.
Just not home.
It's Bill F. It's Dane Neal. Dane is filling in for Wendy. Wendy will return tomorrow, but then she'll be off Friday. It's the new work-a-day, take-a-day-off schedule, which I love.
No,
that's a great schedule.
When you negotiate, whoever is, you know, thinking about this,
right?
You just write that in there.
Yep.
Fine print.
I said to my agent, Ruben Kincaid, I said, Ruben, if you can get me that work-a-day, get-a-day-off schedule, he's
just
working
blend
on
it into some
he's
of that legalese.
Do you know what this word means? Americanism. What is an Americanism?
I mean, I'm going to take a guess based on the context of our conversations.
Yes.
You know, it would be just a thing, you know, some sort of the lingo or the pop culture that I think that we just accept and use and understand that
that's
may be
exactly
identified to people on the outside as something American.
That is the exact right definition for Americanism. It's something that we here in the United States just say. It's part of our vernacular. We just say it because we all know what it means. But to people in other lands who come over here, they don't understand it. So over at Huffington Post, they talked to a bunch of foreigners. Now, Dane, this is not the guys who were in the band Foreigner. These are people who came from other countries. They're visiting our country, and they're listening to the way we speak, we Americans speak, and they don't know what we're saying.
Foreigner.
You know what I meant by that.
Those guys are great. I think they're on tour this summer.
Yeah, they're doing great. Love the guys from Foreigner. For instance, here's a phrase we say here in the United States, working the graveyard shift, and we all know what that means. We're working late at night.
Oh, I thought it meant working outdoor next to...
Well, that's cadavers. What a woman who responded to the survey, who's from another country. Now, they don't say which country they're from, but this particular woman said that a friend told me that her husband was doing the graveyard shift, that he was currently working the graveyard shift, and she thought that that meant that he had gotten a job at a cemetery.
I could see how you would think that. But, of course, it just means overnight.
Yeah.
Right? But all. Where did that come from? Do we have any idea?
I don't know.
No? Okay.
I don't know why. I have no idea. Now, you compared this. We were talking about this earlier. You compared this to how there are certain words or phrases that are kind of Chicagoisms, and I agree with you. There are things we say here that they're not understanding in other parts. Every city has that. Every region has
every
that.
Every area kind of has it, and I think as you kind of expand out, then you have, you know, little pockets of things that people understand or know or,
right.
or say, you know, whether it's like, you know, soda pop and yeah. bubbler and, you know, things that people were like, what did you say?
Yeah.
You know, or we talked in Pennsylvania, they'll say like in cat a corner. You know, there's just things that...
Meaning kitty corner,
which
right? is also ridiculous, but it means diagonally from where you are.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
In Chicago, we've mentioned this on the show several times. We say, like, instead of living room, a lot of Chicagoans will say front room. Even if it's in the back of the house, they'll say the TV's in the front room, and you go to the front room that's in the back of the house. Yes, that's correct.
And you wonder, and these are not things that are taught. There isn't a lingo class, you know, right. where it's like, here's what it means. It's just stuff that you pick up, whether it's from, you know, relatives or friends or that other, you know, the older generation that says things, and then you just kind of understand and you just use it and build it in to True. Whatever you're saying. But that, you know, the front room thing. That's,
yeah, yeah. another one that I noticed... It seems to be a Chicago thing or a Midwestern thing because I don't hear it in other parts of the country. Like when I was doing stand-up and I was traveling, I was in a different city every weekend.
As a person doing that, do you have to... Certainly, you don't want to say, hey, Cleveland, when you're in Toledo.
Yeah.
But do you kind of take that into consideration? A little bit.
Sometimes a word or two or three will have to be changed a little bit to localize it.
So they see you as a friend, yeah. you know, as not right. you know, an outsider.
Right, right. I noticed that in Chicago, we'll say, our sentences will trail off with the words or no. Are you going to go to the store or no? Instead of or not. For some reason in Chicago or the Midwest, we say or no, which is strange because it should be or not.
And you really don't have to add any of it. You could say, are you going to the store?
Yeah, that's right. That
and the
says
person's
it all.
Going to give you an answer.
That's right. It's not going to just stand there. Was there more to that sentence? No, I was kind of done with the sentence. I'll be in the front room if you need me. All right. So again, these are Americanisms.
On the Davenport.
Right, right. Looking at the icebox. For instance, we use the phrase, not just in Chicago, but in America, it's a piece of cake, but a foreigner wouldn't understand that. Somebody said, when I first moved here from Russia, I was always confused by that expression, it's a piece of cake. It's very confusing. Because if something is a piece of cake, it's easy.
It means it's easy.
But cake isn't easy.
To bake, it can be difficult. Plus, there's so many different kinds of cake, right?
Right.
Some are more difficult than others.
Right.
And then you could say, like, oh, well, it's easy to eat a piece of cake. Well, not so. If it's a very large piece of cake, and let's say it's rich, like the ones they have at maybe Cheesecake
yes.
Factory, it could be tough.
It can be difficult.
It could be difficult.
It could be quite an outing.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's thought of as it's because everyone typically likes it.
Right.
You know.
Right. But that shouldn't be easy. That should just be universally loved. That should, if something was universally loved.
Well, could say, like, oh, man, that's a big bowl of Brussels sprouts. I'd be thinking, oh, wow.
That's bad.
That's going to be tough to get through.
I agree with you. Here's another one. Now, this one, oh, I have railed against this one forever and ever and ever. They say, a vast majority of Americans I've met, now keep in mind, these are people from other countries. So this is a person named Georgie Kempton. They don't say where these people are from. That's frustrating. I wish I knew where Georgie was from. A vast majority of Americans that I've met say, I could care less when they mean that they don't care. This makes no sense to me. In order to achieve the intended meaning, it should be, I couldn't care less. Since I was a little kid, whenever anyone says, I could care less, I always go, don't you mean I couldn't care less? And I've never been able to sway anybody. Once they fall into that camp of I could care less instead of I couldn't care less, it's over.
Well, I think people understand what it is that you're saying, and I think that's really the purpose of saying it. Is
right.
You're trying to convey something that,
right.
that you don't care, you know, and you build it into this little kind of bit of conversation. And then I think it takes over. Like, it just is what it is, and then people get it. They're not necessarily dissecting the exact words and what they really mean. Of course, you are, because you're a stickler for perfection, Bill. But yeah, some of these people. Me. But you wonder, right? And you know, that's certainly something we see.
But when you try to explain to them why their phraseology is incorrect, when you say no, what you want to say is, I couldn't care less, as if to say, there's no way that you're telling me
the least amount that I could possibly care.
Right.
There's no wiggle room for even more uncaring.
So why does half the population not give in to that and go, wow, I've been saying that wrong all these years?
No. I don't know. Crazy. We're weird.
Here's a woman who says that it disturbs her that the words flammable and inflammable mean the same thing. P.S. They do. It means both words mean easily starting a fire. Whatever it is that's flammable or inflammable means it could easily start on fire. Shouldn't they be the opposite, though? It should be, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Like, inflammable should be, like, impervious to flame.
Yes, yes.
Right?
From here on in, when something is impervious to flame, I'm going to say that.
Let's just go the extra mile. Everyone's trying to take a shortcut in life here. Let's just say impervious to flame.
Right.
There you go.
Right. A woman here says, I wish so badly they said where these people are from. It says, when people pronounce the H in house or in herd, but not the H in herbs. You can't explain that to me, America. Well, that's just one. I mean, there are so many words in the English language that have an extra letter. Herbs should be spelled, if all things were equal in the universe, E-R-B-S.
Yes, they should.
There's no reason for the H. It's a waste of
herbs. If you wanted, you could add an extra B.
Right. Herbs. Like llama.
Right. I mean, you could do that. It's weird. You're having kids that are, we've got like a 11-year-old, 12-year-old, and a 7-year-old, and they're starting to, you know, work through all of the words, some more than others.
Yeah.
And there are sometimes you just have to explain that there's just things you have to memorize. You know, there isn't always, you know, a set of rules that you should go by. You just have to memorize that this word is pronounced in a crazy way, or here's what it means, even though it doesn't make sense.
Pneumonia does not need the P, Dane.
It doesn't need it.
It doesn't need it.
It's
clunky.
It's a trim the grammatical fat situation.
Time to get rid of the P in pneumonia. Back. It makes me angry. All right. Jerry's on the line. Jerry, how are you?
Good. I want to let the panel know I've been bandying about something for years, but it's regardless. You know, somebody say regardless of that, and then there's irregardless. And a friend of mine corrected me and said, there's no such word as irregardless.
I think your friend is right, though, isn't he? Or she? I think.
And I've never looked it up, but I actually trick people, and I say, well, how many R's are in irregardless? And they'll tell me, and I say, nope, sorry, there's no such word. There's zero.
Well done. Very nicely done. But does it make you want to change and not say irregardless when a friend, somebody close to you says, hey, you're using a word that's improper grammar? Does that bother you, or you're okay with it?
I'm kind of anal when it comes to that kind of stuff. I consider myself a well-read person.
Yeah.
And I've done a little bit of writing.
Yeah.
And I kind of like to jump on people and show off. But a lot of times I'll sneak attack them and study up on something.
Yeah.
And then just throw it out at the bar, and then I'll act like I'm an expert on everything. But really all I know about is the subject I'm talking
Good.
About.
Excellent. Jerry, thank you.
Have a nice day.
Take care.
Aggressive grammar by
Very
Jerry.
Very aggressive.
He's attacking. He's jumping on.
Even when people say anal, they should be saying anal retentive, because anal and anal retentive are exactly the opposite. So I hate to get technical, but let's be honest. That's
whole book right there.
Right. It should be. All right. We'll take a quick break and then more of these Americanisms. Do you have some? We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and it's Dane Neal. Dane is sitting in for Wendy, who will be back tomorrow. We're talking about Americanisms. I know it's a new word for a lot of you. It's a new word for me. What it means is words or phrases that we here in America just accept as part of our everyday speech. We're used to them. We know what they mean. Sometimes we don't know where they come from, but we know what they mean.
Yep.
But people from other lands who are visiting us,
they're confused.
They're very confused by this thing. Somebody said, and this is a good one, in America, you people are always hitting something. You're hitting the gas. You're hitting the light. You're hitting the button. What's with all the hitting? Why are we so physical?
Well, you heard, you know, one of our other callers, you know, he's jumping on people. He's you know, yep. he's attacking,
yes.
you know, verbally. So I think that's just our nature, right? That
yeah.
we're naturally aggressive people in general. And hitting, I think, just means that you're doing it, obviously.
Right.
I'm going to turn on the light. If you're hitting Hit the
violent.
Yeah, I don't know why. You should be like, kick the brakes.
Right.
You're usually...
You're not punching the brake.
Yeah.
Well, I've heard people say that,
punch
though.
It.
Right.
Come on.
No, that's
what's
wrong.
Going on here?
A woman says, when people in America say, yeah, no. Did you ever hear this?
Yes, of course.
Like, see, during a conversation,
yeah,
you're no, I didn't do that. Did I? No. Yeah, no. I did. Yeah. I don't know why. You can't combine both.
It's sort of the verbal version of kind of the slow clap. It's like, right. No. You know,
right.
That's
right. Here's one. The word bi-weekly, which of course here means every 14 days, every 2 weeks, they say in Australia or in the UK, we like to say fortnightly. Do me a favor. At some point today, everybody listening, use that word. Just throw that word in. I'll be there fortnightly and see what kind of
response. Let's do this fortnightly.
Yeah. You and I, Dane, have got to get together every fortnightly.
Fortnightly.
Oh, yeah. All right. When would that be again? It sounds so Tennessee.
It sounds kind of regal, right?
They say that at Wimbledon.
Like you'd say, like, indubitably.
Right. Right, right, right. Here's another woman who yells out the word pocketbook. How on earth is a handbag called a pocketbook? It's too big to be a pocketbook.
It's like an accessory Tourette's.
Yes.
Pocketbook.
Right. Right. So abrupt. A British person says, you say jelly, we say jam. In the UK, jelly is nothing but a wobbly dessert. That's true, right?
Yeah. I was just thinking pocketbook could be a safe word, too. You're just blurting it out.
Could be. Yeah, it definitely could be. In America, you're used to saying sidewalk, but for the rest of the English-speaking world, we like to say pavement. Is that true? I don't know if that one's true.
Well, pavement is, sidewalk is, concrete or pavement,
Yeah.
But then also is the road.
Yeah.
Pavement, that usually means like the street.
Right.
Hit the
right.
pavement.
Hit the pavement.
Hit the sidewalk.
Right. This woman says, in America, you like to call bathrooms restrooms. Is anyone in there really just resting? Well,
yes.
Technically, no, but you're probably not going to take a bath in there either. And it is called a bathroom.
Yeah. Well,
who goes to the public bathroom and goes,
oh, that's
true. I'm
going
to scrub up.
Yep. Well, even the public ones, it says restrooms. And I don't know that there's a lot of resting in there. Sometimes you wonder what people are doing in there the entire time.
I don't want to know.
It could be resting.
Whatever they're in there doing, it's none of my business. Here's a woman who says, in America, you like to wear your tennis shoes for everything except playing tennis.
Now, Bill, for you personally, Your gym-related shoes, your sneakers, if you will,
yeah.
are literally tennis shoes because
yes.
you do play tennis.
Right.
But for those people who don't play tennis on a regular basis or in every piece of footwear they have,
yeah.
I don't know, how did tennis get such a big deal? It wouldn't be like...
Well, this is a tricky one because...
Back in the day, were the only shoes that were used that were kind of... made for traction and moving around, were tennis shoes?
When you were a little kid, did you call them tennis shoes? Because we used to call them gym shoes when I was really little, and then at some point, everybody we knew switched over, no longer called them gym shoes, they called them tennis shoes.
I don't... Maybe sneakers? I mean, you knew... Again, it would be a...
Sneakers! Someone says that word in the Midwest! It's
someone's
wonderful.
Still saying sneakers. I also know...
And why sneakers? Is it because they didn't have the clop-clop of, like, your traditional...
Because you could sneak up on somebody and play tennis with them, and they wouldn't know what hit them.
Right, that's what
it is. Where'd I get a racket from?
They started out, I think, probably, the criminals first, right? Your cat burglars, if you will, would wear them sneaking around.
Yep. Before my wife and I went to England, we were lucky enough to go to England several years ago, and somebody said to me, you'll be able to spot Americans in a minute in England. And I said, how? And they go, by their footwear. All the Americans are going to wear tennis shoes, sneakers, gym shoes, call them what you want. But the British people, the locals, will all wear very nice, sensible shoes. And I said, well, that can't be true. Boy, was it accurate. All the Americans, I shouldn't say all,
almost
all the Americans.
Describe their sensible shoes.
Just shoes that you would wear as semi-dress shoes, not $250 pairs of shoes.
For a shift as a nurse in a hospital?
Like if you walked around here at WGN, easily half the people here... Regardless of their job, on air, salespeople, behind the scenes, whatever you're doing, half the people are going to be wearing tennis shoes. That would not be the case in the UK. They'd all be wearing dressier shoes, unless
they're playing tennis.
Then. But that's it.
You know what that is? I think it's just, I don't know. I guess it's just what people, we're also not all of us here in America, certainly some of us, we're not all chain smoking either. Whereas like if you go to a lot of places in Europe, they're doing that. So I think
right.
it's like
that's
when
the trade-off.
What would you rather do?
Footwear or
You got lung cancer.
You got lung cancer. All right, we will take a quick break. We're headed toward the stream. Dane and I are going to be doing the bonus hour on the stream. Come along with us, or if you like, stay here and listen to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Coming up, the stories that matter with David Jennings from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.